Hello, and welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Time Security Podcast Series. My name is Ian Murphy, and my guest today is Joel Serrajois, Threat Intelligence Manager at Entity Limited Security Division. We're going to be talking about the changes that COVID-19 has had on the workload of Security Operations Center analysts and what that means as we all return to work. Hi, Joel.
Hello. My name is Joel Serrajois. As Ian said, I work with threat intelligence in Entity. In my job, I work with operationalizing detection capabilities for our services that we provide as an MSSP. That is around feeds and news that we need to input into our platforms as service. So that could be feeds around the latest COVID-19 phishing domains that we need to put into place to detect in our customer networks. It could also be intelligence that we generate ourselves based on the incidents that we report to our customers. I work as an interface to the Entity R&D side. Entity has a huge amount of effort put into R&D efforts, where we develop machine learning capabilities and innovative into various different projects and areas, and that sometimes needs to be put into place in our MSS services. I also participate in performing vendor evaluations and integrations into the platforms and services that we provide.
It's been a year since we last talked, and at that point we were talking about a day in the life of a SOC analyst. The world's a very different place now. We're all working from home. We've seen a significant increase in the number of attacks and the introduction of new AI-based tools. That's had an impact on workload and also on how we deal with workload. What are the changes that you've seen?
COVID has changed a lot of things. But in general, the change that I've seen over the last year is that the bar for what we expect has been raised. That means that both the customers that we have, the analysts at analyst firms, but also the SOC analysts working with the services that we provide, continuously set the bar higher for what they expect from the services and the products that we deliver. Going back just a few years, when I was working as a SOC analyst, we were happy if an alert from a vendor device, for example, included a CVE reference. Nowadays, when we deliver security incidents or we're talking about upcoming threats, we have full frameworks of Mitre attack frameworks, we're GitHubification, we're sharing all kinds of intelligence and TTPs. All of the time, we're pushing the boundaries, and that's really has taken a leap the last year. The second thing is that now with COVID-19, IT security is a hot topic. We've seen an increase in questions and thoughts from our customers. Customers who previously were just interested in the service, but were just having it as a checkbox or a compliance thing, are now more interested in understanding what's actually going on in their networks.
That second one's fascinating because Entity has only recently put out its report on the amount of aging and obsolete equipment in people's networks. Part of that was talking about the increased shift they were seeing to SD-WAN and people moving towards managed services. When you're talking to these customers, do they understand that it's not as easy as saying, we're going to engage your service, or are you having to do an awful lot of education so that you can provide that service?
That is a very good question. The customers that we have come from all different backgrounds, and they have varying maturity levels internally in their company. Some customers might have had MSSPs before or internal SOC operations before. They come in with a very standardized, very homogeneous infrastructure where very little is actually needed to get up and running. And other customers come in with almost nothing. It's very difficult to say what the general customer looks like because it's very much a case-to-case basis.
How much visibility are you discovering that they have into their networks? And how many new attacks are you beginning to see that they would otherwise have not picked up?
When we start a service for a customer, there's always this tuning period in the early stages where we are learning about their environment. They are learning as we are learning, where we're sharing what we're seeing, anomalies or various things that look very weird. The first few months, there's always a couple of incidents that we find that really stand out, that are really critical or needs to be handled as soon as possible. When we talk to clients, we don't see it as a one-time effort. It's important to get up and running, to start getting visibility, but then not to let go and stop, but to always continue that process of trying to identify unknown areas or identify places in the network where you don't have visibility. With COVID, that's been really a big question for a lot of customers because, as you said, employees are moving to home, they're moving to unsupported hardware, they might not be using VPN. How do you keep track of which users are not using the VPN? How do you know about the incidents that are potentially outside of your managed systems but will still affect your company? And that's a very big problem for a lot of companies.
One of the things that we talked about previously was this shift away from just giving companies large amounts of threat intelligence to giving them actionable intelligence, a playbook, information on what they need to do, rather than here's all the data, work it out yourselves. How many now want you to go beyond that playbook and actually do all the remediation for them?
It's definitely been an increase in customers asking for us to perform remediation, or that's a very hot topic around pushing the boundaries, raising the expectations of what an MSSP perform for us. We are working on providing that to a number of clients. It's also a very important question to also have internally in the customer network, that the IT security team might be pushing for more active remediation, more automated playbooks to isolate servers that are infected or isolate hosts that are infected. But that doesn't necessarily translate with the other teams in the company. There might be a playbook that automatically locks down a production server. From an IT security perspective, that's a very good thing. From a production or a sales perspective, that's a horrible thing. There is always these conversations that the difficult part is not to isolate or proactively take measures against something. It's the full chain of building an understanding and getting everyone on board.
The reason I asked both that and the network question is the move to home has had a significant change in the applications and the tools that end users are now using from home. They're making much more use of cloud-based services, taking on services that the company has never used before, so it has no understanding or visibility. What has that meant for your workload in having to investigate more cloud services and build a viable picture of threat that different services bring?
The first thing we need to figure out is how do we get visibility of the systems or the services that they are using. When people move to home, they have to use a VPN, they have to use the workstation that is provided. When some of these functions that are underlying or building the foundation that we build our analytics on and we build the detection based on, if some of these fail or all of them fail, that is a huge gap of what we can perform or what us as an MSSP, but also the company IT security team can do about it. It's important when that question arises, we need to figure out how do we make sure that the data is always available for us to work with. Then we can move to understanding which services are the users subscribing to, what are they doing, what kind of shadow IT are they building, and then taking actions from there.
As part of NTT, you can draw from the big NTT communications pipe, which is roughly 40% of global internet traffic. How much is that useful during the current situation to enable you to see signs of attacks that you can quickly begin to look to remediate across all clients?
It's important to talk about the threats that we're seeing. There's been a lot of media talk about increased attacks towards hospitals, for example, or medical related topics. What's also important to note is that we're seeing a lot of COVID-19 themed attacks. You have COVID themed email for phishing, you have COVID-19 themed applications. But what's actually behind these attacks are the same malware, the same actors that were active prior to COVID-19. The actors are using COVID-19 as a springboard into the networks to utilize and exploit the human psychology that people want to click a link where it says COVID-19 information. The actual malware or the actual threat that comes with it, it's very similar to what was present before COVID-19. For us, the usage of the entity reach to the ISP backbone network is very much the same as it was before COVID-19.
Phishing attacks and malware are going to end up on those local machines that people have. How do you help clients understand what they need to remediate? How do the SOC analysts easily detect attacks, credential theft, other things, before the attack has actually fully unfolded?
That's a good question. The most important thing when you're thinking about detection capabilities, about how to detect when someone has lost their credentials, for example, or been a victim of phishing, is to think of it as layers. How do we build as many detection capabilities as possible to detect different things? When we're looking at user behavior, for example, what kind of behaviors are this user doing? Is it normally logging onto a specific server? Is it normally logging in at the middle of the night? You have all these different detection capabilities or behaviors that you're looking for that paint a fuller picture. then it's up to the analyst to put all these different indicators or interesting pieces of information together to build a context. That's the difficult thing, the thing that we often want to automate as much as possible. We don't want analysts to look at every single thing that is interesting in a customer network. We want to build a picture automatically for them so that they can be the ones who are more or less the judge to say, I've seen the evidence, this is interesting, or I've seen the evidence and this is not interesting. And then we can talk to the customer about what their next steps should be.
User behavior has become quite challenging because we used to know where they were generally logging in from. We'd be able to predict the times of day that made sense. We could very quickly identify the mobile workers who would be connecting while they were on the road. Now we have people who are at home. They'll connect when they want. They're not working to a standard day. They're fitting it in around childcare and everything else they have to do. How quickly can you rebuild behavioral models for individuals?
Models can be rebuilt in as fast as you want. The beauty of machine learning and AI is that the more data you have available, the more your model and your detection capabilities will be accurate. We're rebuilding and training our engine continuously all the time. What happens when users' behaviors are changing, it might result in a few more false positives or gray zone area detections in the beginning. But then as we go along, as we get more data to build this kind of understanding of how users are acting in the new COVID-19 landscape, then that will change also our capabilities.
With users working from home, they're no longer in an office environment where the machines are managed and data that moves around is in a secure space. A lot of users download files, they work on them, and then when they're ready to upload them, they send them back. That doesn't always delete the files off the local machine. As you build your models of behavior, are you seeing a significant shift in data access and the downloading of data?
We've seen a large push over the last few years to these cloud-based collaboration systems like SharePoint, Office 365. People are sharing, editing. And in this environment where people have moved to home, we've seen even more of this, where people are utilizing these services. I wouldn't say that it's changed a lot, but it's definitely still a difficult area to predict. How do people work with this kind of data?
You were talking just now about the ability to rebuild the behavioral models, which of course are using the tools that we have in the SOC for the analysts. But one of the things we've seen with COVID-19 is the reemergence of older attacks, also more complex attacks, a lot more state actor involvement. Has that changed the tools that you need and the tools that your teams are using?
I think yes and no. A lot of work in this SOC is about utilizing the right tool for the right problem, using the right kind of detection capability, depending on what kind of threat you're looking to find. What we've seen and what I think is the future of a SOC analyst is a person who is able to work a lot on automation and what's commonly called as GitHubification, that analysts today are not only just looking at logs, looking at data, trying to figure out what they're looking at, but building their own tools, building their own capabilities to automate what they've already done before so that it can be done again. When they're doing that, they also need to be able to consume tools and capabilities that others have built that might be shared in white papers, might be shared online on Twitter. The tools are changing all the time, and the knowledge of an analyst needs to change all the time. What we're doing at NTT is we're also allowing our analysts time to build their own tools, build their own techniques on how to most effectively work with the data that we get.
If they were all in the office and doing this, that's great, because we all know in the SOC, we go and have a coffee, we sit down, and we share. But the teams are now mainly working from home. How are your analysts recreating that collaborative effort in order to be able to build those tools and share that information?
A lot of the people who are working in the SOC are younger analysts. They're recently or not so recently left university, and they've grown up living in online chat rooms or video games, and they know how to collaborate with their friends and hang out online. But it's definitely an issue, and I think it's forced a lot of people to think about how to most effectively drive this kind of project management in a situation where we previously have not been required to do so.
We're sharing customer information and we're talking about threats. The reason we build our SOCs the way we do is so that there can be no eavesdropping, no ability for somebody to see what we're doing and how we're doing it. How are you recreating those environments for your staff at home so that they can be secure?
Entity have these standard collaborative systems that all other companies have, which enables a lot of the functionality that you have from Discord or other services. A lot of it is also talking to the analyst about what are your requirements, what are your needs, how can we help you be productive? As managers and higher-ups, it's about making our analyst as effective as possible. The analyst very often know exactly what they need. They might need a specific open source tooling, something from GitHub. As long as they know that it's secure and it's something we can host by ourselves, for example, or it's something that we can utilize internally securely, then that's something we can use, of course.
You're talking here about your teams being able to build their own tools, pulling stuff down from GitHub, creating things that they need. But you work, as you said earlier, closely with the R&D team over at NTT. Does that give you an opportunity to test some of the things that they're working on to improve what people are able to use in the SOC?
Yes, and that's probably one of the most exciting parts about my job, to see these things that are built by our R&D team around the world that are built from a very scientific or research-driven focus, which means that when you put something that works in theory into production, you have all these really crazy things happen where you have to tune it to work in reality, not just in a lab or in a theoretical piece. That's really exciting, and I think that's one of the things that I found most fun about my job.
The challenges that a lot of people are finding now they're working from home is, how do I find somewhere where I can work quietly? How can I focus on my job? How can I control and manage my time? SOC analysts, by the very nature of the people we tend to attract, are very mission focused. We have a tendency collectively to not necessarily be the best at timekeeping once we're locked into a job. How is that beginning to affect your teams? Are they working many more hours than they expected? Are they finding the pressure of being at home very difficult compared to being in the office?
I think everyone reacts differently to this kind of situations that we're in right now. Everyone needs to remember the human aspect of being in a lockdown and being forced or required to be at home much more than you have been before. It can have a very difficult effect on the human just by the nature of how it is. As a company and as managers, it's very important to have that conversation with your team and your employees about how are you feeling, how is it going, what's working, what's not working, how can we help you make this situation better. Everyone reacts differently to this kind of situation, and health of the employees is always the most important thing. You need an environment where you can sit and it's quiet and you're not getting disturbed. It's also a situation where a lot of people might not have an environment at home where they can work at all. Some people in our SOC, for example, they have quite recently come out of university. They might be on the younger side and living in smaller apartments, possibly without the opportunity to have an ergonomic chair and a table. So how do we help them create an environment where they can work 8-12 hour night shift without having health problems? All these things are essential to having a good service, but not necessarily something you think about when everyone is at work.
When we spoke previously, you talked about this issue of shift work and how you move shifts around to accommodate those with family, those without. With everybody on lockdown, even those with families are finding it hard to work during the normal day. Are you finding more pressure on your teams when it comes to being comfortable and being able to work? And are they splitting their time up throughout the day and doing a short period here and a period somewhere else?
That's the beauty of working in IT security. A lot of the work that needs to be done is not necessarily needed to be done just at that time. It can be done 5 minutes later or 15 minutes later. In my team, we've been very relaxed about giving everyone time to take their kid out for a walk or their dog for a walk. Or if you want to make a dinner, that's fine. You can move your hours around. As long as the work that needs to be done is getting done within time, it's not a problem to work as needed.
How does that play out in terms of reacting to an attack? If we've got people in the office, we can very quickly say, right, everybody stop. We've got a live situation here. This is where you're all going to focus. When everybody's at home, how easy is it to say, hello, I need five of you now to be focusing on this, and you'll deal with A, you'll deal with B, you'll deal with C.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone who has a shift work, for example, or responsible of real-time monitoring or real-time response to attacks, do their hours at the time when they are required to. So far, it's worked very well that we have a communication system where our analysts can talk to each other, request help when needed, Of course, we have phone lists so that if someone is out walking around for 20 minutes and we actually need that person right now, we can call them and we can get the work needed. So far, we haven't had any issues related to that.
We're now talking about everybody going back to work, and companies are starting to struggle about how do we clean offices, how do we clean desks, how do we socially distance our staff back in an office environment. One of the joys of being in IT is that we can work from remote, and we often have the skills to be able to debug our issues as they occur. Do you see SOCs going back to the environments they were before COVID-19, or do you see an increased number of your teams working from home?
I'm not really sure what I expect from the future. I think this has been a large-scale social experiment about how we as humans handle this kind of situation. And I think that there will definitely be a lot of science and research around how people have reacted to this environment, to the reality that we were put in over the last few months, that will take years to fully understand.
I love that phrase, social experiment, because it really is, isn't it?
I don't want to be insensitive or anything, because it is a real danger. People have died, and a lot of people feel very bad about being at home and living in this kind of situation. But looking back and taking a step back, I think there's a lot of things that we can learn about what happened and how different countries handled the situation, what kind of actions were effective, how did companies handle working from remote, what kind of guidelines or routines were effective. I hope to be able to go back to work soon. I miss the office. I miss talking to my coworkers and being a social person. But I also think that there are a lot of things that will change. We will learn to be more effective remotely. We will learn how to do this in a more effective way. Not necessarily remotely, but yeah, we'll see.
Of course, you're just one sock in a chain of socks that NTT has, and you're used to working with people in different time zones and handover of jobs and tasks. How has that managed to flow throughout the situation?
It's actually been very friction-free. From our perspective, the SOCs are just a physical location where people are located and working with their computers. Now, what's been happening is everyone is at home working with their computers. When we do shift handovers or we're exchanging information, we're utilizing the same tools, the same techniques, the same procedures as we did before. So unless you were actually physically in a SOC, I don't think you would notice that we moved to a remote working procedure.
And I think that probably makes this the biggest success story of any role in any organization.
Yeah, we've been really lucky to have a workforce that is so understanding, but also so effective at adapting to this kind of new working reality.
Let's hope it's a one-off and we don't have to repeat it.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you.